It's Friday. I love it. I love it. I love it. Triple happy hour. Time for American Hit Radio Friday and 5 p.m. all wrapped up at the same exact moment. And, of course, on Fridays, I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales. Ryan running the board.
I am in the background today.
Excellent. Excellent. And, of course, keeping me on track so that I don't make things totally goofy with what we've been covering. It's hard sometimes, to be honest, because, well, we've been covering Pink Floyd now for quite a while. This is part 17 in our covering of the history of Pink Floyd. And I will admit that this series was a bit difficult at times for me because I knew that I couldn't duplicate things that I had already done. I certainly didn't want to do that. If I already covered an entire album on a Wednesday show, it seemed inappropriate and obviously redundant if I was going to do it again on a Friday. So what I did was I took the original show and I decided I would just drop it in and put it on the website so that it's there within the Pink Floyd series, but it's not going to be part of what we air live on Fridays. So if you're somebody who just tunes in and listens to what's happening live and you don't go to the website, you've missed about 6 shows because we planted about that many with albums that we've already covered, albums like The Wall, Parts 1 and 2, and which will be coming up. I guess we didn't do that one yet, but that will be coming up on Wednesday. And Animals and Dark Side of the Moon, of course. So anyway, all of that. If you go to the website, you'll get the real full the panoply of shows that we've done, all 17 of them when this one is done, because this one is part 17. And this brings us to a weird era with the band, since so many of the classic albums were the very things that we didn't do live on Fridays, which are on the website. It got us to this point a little bit quicker. So now that we've covered the series of global classic albums by Pink Floyd, now we can address the aftermath. And I've got to say, quite honestly, that the mid-80s was not the best of times for Pink Floyd or for Roger Waters, who was now a solo artist. The albums released at this time were certainly not bad albums, but they definitely lacked the spark and the intensity of what the audience had come to expect from Pink Floyd since 1973. The era of infallibility at this point is over. So, after Animals, after The Wall, even after The Final Cut, we can now take a look at some of Roger's solo work from this era and the first Pink Floyd album released without him. There was an awful lot of bad blood between the band and Roger when the whole thing fell apart. Roger decided that he was going to stick to his own theme. We talked about this a little bit last week with when you talked about the Hitchhiking album, about that was meant to be a theme for a Pink Floyd record, but Pink Floyd chose to not do it. And then when he brought it up a second time, they were saying, well, we already moved past that. So he said, well, then I'm going to leave the band and I'm going to record it. And then he went out of his way to try to stop the band from being able to continue with the name Pink Floyd. But that became problematic because he realized that nobody had exact rights. And if he had done that, then he might end up losing all of his royalties. So he decided that he had to basically back off. So, but there was all this bad blood. And it wasn't good for anybody. I mean, it was bad for Pink Floyd. It was bad for Roger. And having all this stuff, the only people, the thing that it was good for really was the press, which had a field day. In fact, Rolling Stone magazine did Let It Be Known that the article that they had posted about Pink Floyd and their breakup that year was the best-selling issue that they had all year. Everybody wanted to buy it because everybody wanted to hear the dirt. And so that's where the money went. Meanwhile, though, people weren't even aware of the fact of some of the things that were coming out. Like, we're going to start this show with an album dedicated to a film, actually, called When the Wind Blows, a soundtrack album. It was an animated war film, actually. And originally, David Bowie was going to be the person who was going to be putting this together. He was going to contribute several songs to the soundtrack, but then he had an album to put out called Never Let Me Down. This was around 1986. So he said, listen, I got to work on that. I don't have time for this. So after like recording like one piece of music, I think that made the record, he left. So they brought Roger Waters in to take over. Now, the thing is, there was a lot of stuff on the album that was definitely just filler and really not worth listening to. But there's also some pretty good stuff. There's the Bowie track, which is the title song, When the Wind Blows. That was rather interesting. There's a track by Hugh Cornwell, which I'm not a big fan of, but it's called Facts and Figures. That's on there. And even Squeeze put out a song called What Have They Done, which is on the soundtrack for When the Wind Blows. Roger, though, took over for two of the main songs on the album. The first one is the one we'll play right now. It's called Towers of Faith.
Prophet reclined on the golden heights.
Oh, the lonely boys
said this land is my land to the Shiites. Jehovah looked up from the Sea of Galilee beneath. He said, I see you, you thief. This land is my land, and this sand is my sand, and this band is my band.
Oh, the lonely boys, looking over the shoulder. Check it out, every boulder in the park, where the gates are closed for night after dark.
And the Pope rolled up in his armored van. He fell on his knees and kissed the land. He said something that I did not understand. It was in Polish. Then up stepped an aide. He said, I will translate. Here's what his holiness said.
Closed off the dock.
This album really did suit Roger Waters well because of the theme. I mean, Waters loves, well, he's obviously obsessed with singing about war and how horrible it is. And it's something that has affected his life in incredibly profound ways, having lost his father in World War II. So I think that's why this album basically ended up falling in his lap. And he was probably glad to take it because it was a rather interesting film. I guess you could still find it on some format. If you look for When the Wind Blows, it wasn't really a theatrical thing, although it did get released. This is interesting. It was in one theater in the United States, and it grossed a little bit over $5,000 total at the box office. That was it. And then, boom, it went to, I think, VHS and eventually DVD and all that sort of thing. So that's what I guess how you would find it. I'm sure you could find it on YouTube, too. You find everything on YouTube these days, right? But there's one more song that Roger wrote, which I think really falls very much in step with his solo albums. And even with, of course, the Pink Floyd album, the Final Cut, which was, after all, referred to as an album by Roger Waters, performed by Pink Floyd. You can almost feel the nastiness in that. Just that alone, you know? Like, wow. You just him grabbing all the credit. But this track is called Folded Flags.
Before the cold wind blows.
All right, so technically that is the beginning of Roger Waters' career outside of Pink Floyd. Because up until this time, even on his previous solo album, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, at that point he was still a member of Pink Floyd. But here is where it begins to fall apart. And this is also where Pink Floyd is really perhaps almost going to end up not existing. Roger's not worried about that. Roger's much more interested in releasing his own debut album. And he beats the band to the punch in that regard. And he releases the album Radio Chaos, which is so difficult to understand the theme. It's I can give you some vague idea about it's about a guy named Billy who is physically disabled, maybe mentally disabled. He has cerebral palsy. And he's mentally challenged, but he's also like superhuman because he can hear radio waves. So this is the basic idea. And he has a twin brother who worked in the mines, but he lost his job in the mines. And he went out for some sort of a reason, I guess, to rebel or whatever. And he has a picture of him taken, like throwing a brick off of a bridge, and it turns out that a taxi driver is killed, so his brother goes to prison, and then Benny, who is in, or Billy, who's in the wheelchair, has to go to live with his uncle in Los Angeles, and when he goes to Los Angeles, he ends up calling up a radio station, KAOS, to speak with the DJ, and that's really just the beginning of the story. it's pretty heavy. But this song, if you can listen to the words, might begin to convey some of that information. From Radio Chaos, this song is called Who Needs Information?
You're from the Valley? Wales. Now, is this sperm or blue tip? Sorry.
Benny went out last night looking for fun. Supping ale in the moonlight, waiting for the dawn to come. Benny pointed at a hi-fi shop. He said, "Hey man, look at all the stuff they got. How'd you make a have out of a have not? Who needs information when you're working underground? Just give me confirmation. We could win a million pounds. Benny climbed up on a footbridge and he teetered on the parapet. He said, "Can you see the whites of the headlights? Are they coming? We can win a million pounds.
You can just pick up little clues. Like you hear the DJ say, so your brother's in jail? But, I mean, it's really tough to follow the story if you're just listening to the album. Like, you got to read the book to get it, you know? A few songs go on with the story of him talking to the DJ and telling them his life story about his brother and all of that. But as the album ends, Billy does something, like I said, he might have been, like, mentally, you know, off, but he was apparently a bit of a genius too. And he was able to hack. No, this is a story. This is Roger's story. He hacks into a military satellite. And in so doing, he's able to tell the world that he has launched ICBMs all over the major cities of the entire planet. And they've got 4 minutes to live. And that he had also deactivated the military's power to retaliate. So he has the whole world panicking. He was just saying that he did it. He didn't actually do it. But, yeah, I mean, it's a story anyway. So I don't know. It's hard to pick out what exactly is trying to be said here. But this is the song where that happens. It's called 4 Minutes. And the song itself happens to be 3 minutes and 39 seconds. And you are listening to WHPC, WHPC HD in Garden City, New York.
Okay. They press the button, Billy? What button? You mean the button? Goodbye. Oh, yes. This ain't au revoir. It's goodbye. This is Chaos. It's a beautiful, balmy Southern California summer day. It's 80 degrees. I said balmy. I said balmy. Okay. I'm Jim, and this is Radio Chaos. And with only 4 minutes left to us, let's use this as wisely as possible. Out of Dodger Stadium, it's the bottom of the seventh. The Dodgers are leading 3-0 over the Giants. And for those of you who are looking to go surfing tomorrow, too bad. I'm kind of lost out here, to tell you the truth. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if the reports that we're getting are correct, this could be it.
After a near miss on a plane, you swear you'll never fly again. After the first kiss when you make up, you swear you'll never break up again. And when you've just run a red light, sit shaking under the street light. Sweating yourself, you'll never drink and drive again.
Sometimes I feel like
thank you.
that brings us to the end of the album with a song called Tide is Turning, where the whole world realizes that it was a prank. But they felt so frightened, according to Roger, that they decided that they all should just go home and love their families and everything's going to be peaceful from now on, because they were so afraid that they were all going to die. And that track is called, well, it's interesting what it's called. It's called The Tide is Turning and subtitled After Live Aid, which I presume he means that something really good happened, you know, by Live Aid, and that he was more or less giving it credit in that sense, I believe. But in a very, it's so weird, counterintuitive and strange, but here's The Tide is Turning.
Shots and world title fights. Jesus Christ, imagine what it must be earning. Who is the strongest? Who is the best? Who holds the aces, the east or the west? This is the crap our children are learning.
All right, so that's Roger's album Radio Chaos, his first solo album after leaving Pink Floyd, his second solo album. Now, he released that in June of 1987. It was about 3 months later when another Pink Floyd album appeared without Roger, the first one ever without him. And now, this is all kind of nuts because, okay, well, here's the way that the story, this is Roger talking about how he ended up handling it the way that he did. He goes, if I'm honest, my idea was that we should go our separate ways. What actually happened was the reason that I finally left and signed the letter was because CBS Records threatened me with the fact that we had a contract with CBS Records and that part of the contract could be construed to mean that we had a product commitment with CBS. And if we didn't go on producing product, they could A, sue us, and B, withhold royalties on that product if we didn't make any more records with them. And I said, that's ridiculous. We'd never have signed a contract like that. But then they showed it to me, and it was indeed ambivalent. So he left Pink Floyd in order to having to file a lawsuit, to avoid having to file a lawsuit that would inevitably have ruined him if he did try to prevent Gilmour and Mason from continuing to record under the Pink Floyd name. He had to back down. Now, that's only Gilmour and Mason because at one point when they were doing The Wall, it was Roger Waters who made Rick Wright sign a clause, a leaving member clause, saying that he would be prevented from officially rejoining the band. So if they were interested, meaning David Gilmour and Nick Mason were interested in still performing as Pink Floyd, they would have to hire Rick Wright as a session musician, which is exactly what they did. But he was not a member of the band, technically, at this point in time. Now, from David Gilmour's point of view, though, he was on tour promoting his album About Face, but he was getting such a bad, you know, crowd result that he actually had to cancel shows because of poor ticket sales. People weren't interested in seeing David Gilmour. They wanted to see Pink Floyd. So this was a big problem. And then Gilmour, then he gets to think about it and he says, quote, David Gilmour, I'm 44 now. I'm too old to start all over again at this stage of my career. And I don't see any reason why I should. Pink Floyd is not some sacred or hallowed thing that never made or bore bad or boring records in the past, and I'm not destroying anything by trying to carry on. So that's what they decided to do. And they release an album called A Momentary Lapse of Reason. Really, it's technically it's a David Gilmour solo album, to be honest, because Rick Wright is only there as a session musician, number one. And the drummer, of course, Nick Mason, felt so out of shape because he hadn't played in so long that he was very insecure about playing. So they brought in other drummers to play on the album. Carmen Appice is the drummer, and Jim Keltner plays drums. Nick Mason plays on a couple of songs, but he's just, again, he's like a studio musician as well. But, I mean, basically the whole thing was an excuse. If the band got together, then people could now have the chance to go to an arena, spend big money, and sit around with 20,000 people to hear David Gilmour and the other two members of Pink Floyd play songs like Shine On You Crazy Diamond and Money. That was the reason. So the album comes out, A Momentary Lapse of Reason, and it did have one hit song that got a lot of radio play, and it's this one called Learning to Fly.
Distance, ribbon of black.
So essentially what you're hearing is David Gilmour getting to work as the new Pink Floyd. And what he did was very smart. He brought Bob Ezrin back in. Bob Ezrin was asked to work with Roger Waters on Radio Chaos. And because of the way that Ezrin was probably treated by Roger, he said, you know, thanks anyway. I think it would be a lot easier if I go to work with David. So he came to London and Bob Ezrin starts helping him put together. They basically spent months going through demos and such and that sort of thing. And he's trying to eke him to do new things. Actually, he was trying to convince him to add some rap and hip hop to the new album. And David Gilmour was like, oh my God, that would be terrible. So thank God, I think, in that sense. But maybe one of he just couldn't believe it. As this is Ezrin speaking, he hated the idea. Well, it was a bad idea, Bob. You know, you don't go to hip hop when you're Pink Floyd. Anyway, David Gilmour's quote about his bandmates, both Nick and Rick were catatonic in terms of their playing ability at the beginning. Neither of them played on this at all, really. In my view, they'd been destroyed by Roger. Such a shame. Well, I'm going to play the live version of a song that appears on A Momentary Lapse of Reason. It's the song Sorrow, which closes that album. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week as we continue with Part 18.
Not enough. Now